Hey, this is Double J, Jeff Jarrett, WWE Hall of Famer, and you're listening to the My 1-2-3 Cents Podcast.
It's my personality to be jittery. It's part of my charm.
Wrestling fans,
are you ready?
It's time for My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast on the Jittery Monkey Podcasting Network.
Give me a hell yeah!
Now, here's your host.
The man is also a very long, dear, personal friend of mine.
Does the guy have a name?
Yes, he has a name.
Kevin Huntsberger.
Woo! Kevin! You're stupid.
Hey friends, welcome to My 1-2-3 Cents, the podcast. This is episode 507. Thanks for watching and or listening on your favorite podcasting app or on youtube.com/my123cents. Don't forget to hit the subscribe button wherever you're listening or watching. And joining me this week is Chad Smart. And Chad, we are going to be taking a fun little trip down SummerSlam lane, if you will. We're going to talk about this past SummerSlam, but we're also going to incorporate elements from previous SummerSlams and just wrestling in general. But first of all, how are you doing?
I'm doing great. It's been a long week in the past week. I think I've averaged getting to bed around 1 o'clock in the morning. And even after watching SummerSlam the night before we recorded this, I finished it at 12:30. And so I'm getting about 5 hours of sleep on average. So I feel great. This should be a very coherent and non-rambling episode.
Well, it has been a long week. And, you know, I can remember back. You and I are old enough to remember the very first SummerSlam in 1988. We were both in high school by that point. And I know you were watching by then, but did you watch the first SummerSlam?
No, because, you know, back then it was on pay-per-view. And like I said, until the Attitude Era, the only pay-per-view that I bought was WrestleMania 5. Mm.
I can remember being in the locker room for gym class the next day, because it was on a Monday that first year. Mm-hmm. And somebody that was talking about it, I wasn't necessarily friendly with them, but I overheard them talking about it. And they said, to me, the big takeaway from the event was the Honky Tonk Man losing the Intercontinental Championship, because I was a Honky Tonk Man fan. Oh. I was like, who in the world beat him? And so then I found out it was the Ultimate Warrior. And I later watched it on cassette. But back in the day, you know, we were talking before we hit record, we have some issues with Peacock. But really, if you think back in the day, you know, we were maybe delayed a little bit in our viewing last night or over the weekend as we're recording this. But back in the day, you would have to wait for a friend to bring it to school the next day or later in the week. And, you know, when I was in college, my parents would record them on pay-per-view and then they would mail the cassette tape to me that week. So, but this was back before there were spoilers. So a lot of times you were genuinely surprised when you were able to see that stuff. So.
Yeah, I thought you were going to say your big takeaway from the first SummerSlam was Miss Elizabeth taking off her skirt.
Yes, that was, I remember that being quote unquote controversial at the time, but geez, Louise, 10 years later, look what they were doing at SummerSlam. So where do you rank SummerSlam as far as overall pay-per-views? Because a lot of people compare it now, especially, and I think, is it next year they're going to go to the two-night format for SummerSlam?
I think 2026 is the first announced two-night. Okay. But I would not be surprised if – what's that?
Minnesota?
Yeah, in Minnesota. But they haven't announced where 2025 is, and I would not be surprised to see 2025 go to two nights.
Is it necessary, do you think?
Based on last night's show, no.
Right.
And based on WrestleMania's, I don't think – I think two nights is too much.
Yeah, I want to get more into that too as we discuss this. And I cut you off on your first question. What's your overall impression of SummerSlam ranking amongst the big four?
Big four, I would probably put it at number three. I mean, obviously WrestleMania is going to be your number one. Royal Rumble, I think, has the spectacle to be the number two. You know, the Royal Rumble match, and then I would put SummerSlam and I know, I think you and I have talked about it before in the podcast. We have a difference of opinions. Survivor Series, I like the concept of the Survivor Series match. I just think they go on too long. And when you have an entire show full of that type of match, I'm not a fan, but I do think there should be a traditional Survivor Series match at every Survivor Series.
Yeah, and that's where you and I differ. I would – SummerSlam has always been my fourth on that, just based on – but again, those first 5 years of Survivor Series are my favorite years because they were all dedicated to the concept and whatnot. But so let's talk a little bit about dual nights, double nights on pay-per-views, because as I was watching last night, there were only seven matches, no tag team matches. So, really 14 superstars in there, getting to wrestle. Now we saw R-Truth and The Miz and Dominic Mysterio at ringside and, obviously all the Bloodline members coming out and then eventually the rest. And we'll talk about that as we go through the show. But I'm like, wow, there's no Rey Mysterio here. There's no Randy Orton isn't wrestling and Kevin Owens isn't wrestling and the Usos, and I know.
And there's no Yeet.
No Yeet. I know there are some folks out with injuries and whatnot. No Jade Cargill or Bianca Belair. No tag team title matches. And I think part of the advantage of SmackDown being on Friday nights and moving the PLEs to Saturday is you almost feel like it's already two nights because you got the big title change on Friday night with the tag team titles and you were able to kind of, with WrestleMania, it's three nights because they do the Andre the Giant. I don't think they did it this past year, but in the past they've done the Andre the Giant Battle Royal at Summers or at SmackDown. So I don't know. What are your thoughts? Does everybody, again, we get into that whole participation trophy mode of does everybody have to wrestle at WrestleMania? Are you less of a superstar if you don't wrestle at SummerSlam or at the Survivor Series, at these big four events?
Yeah, no, not everybody has to be on the show and not everybody has to be champion. Mm-hmm. And I think that one of the biggest problems now is the amount of filler on the shows. And that's my biggest issue. And especially, being on Peacock now, because Peacock has the ad supported tier that you can subscribe to, they would be like, if you're a Peacock, lower tier member, you're going to get a commercial now. If you're a premium subscriber, then you'll see the background package for the next match. And because I didn't time it out last night because I was kind of fast forwarding a bit, but I would say that between the end of the trying to think what match happened before Cody and Solo, but between the end of that match and this,
it was the title match. It was
Damian and
Gunther.
And Gunther. Okay. Between the end of that match and the start of Cody and Solo, it was probably a good 30 minutes, counting the entrances and post-match celebration for Gunther. But, on the one hand, when you're there live, it gives you a chance to go to the bathroom or get something to eat. But when you're watching at home, it's just like, okay, let's get on with the show, especially when you're watching late at night. And thankfully I could fast forward through a lot of that, but yeah, I think there's too much filler on the show. I don't think there needs to be two. And I think the two nights also just because the shows are still like 4 hours long.
Yeah.
And you get there early to, mill around outside and we're old. So if we were in our 20s, it might not be so bad, but sitting in a stadium for 4 hours on back-to-back nights is not my idea of a good time anymore.
I'd be curious to know too what percentage of people go to both nights of WrestleMania. I know we did it back at 39. I'm curious to know, and if you're listening or watching and you've been to the dual night of WrestleMania, let us know. Do you go both nights or do you just attend one night, or with SummerSlam coming up? It's funny because when we were younger, it's like, man, I wish wrestling was on more and we had more, and now it's like literally you can find, now with not even counting the streaming available out there or YouTube for that matter, but just with having basic cable, you could almost every night of the week have something wrestling related, especially now with the WWE and A&E doing the biographies and all that on Sunday nights. AEW's pay-per-views happen on Sundays, but then Monday with Raw, Tuesday with NXT, Wednesday with Dynamite, Thursday with TNA, Friday with Collision and SmackDown, and then
Rampage.
And then Saturday with Collision. Yeah, there's literally I don't want to say too much because, again, you can pick and choose and watch what you want. And I think younger me would have been obsessed with trying to watch it all, but now 50-something me is like, okay, it's on, cool. Social media, I can watch the highlights. I did watch SummerSlam live, which usually I try to watch the big four live as they're happening, which with them being on Saturday nights, and this is kind of we don't go out every weekend, but, you know, and I told my wife, I said, you know, because she's like, what are we doing this weekend? And I said, well, we don't have plans with our friends. I said, you know, SummerSlam's on. I would like to watch it. But if something comes up, I'm not going to lose sleep over it. I can watch it when we get home, or I can watch the highlights on my phone. But we ended up staying in and I watched, and she sat on TikTok, and you know, our other friends were like, well, did she make fun of you while you're watching? And I'm like, no, she didn't, you know, because she's doing her thing, I'm doing my thing. And my pet peeve, in addition to the commercials and the packages and it stretching out the show and adding to it, would be with Peacock last night, for the first time I've ever noticed this, you know, I'm 3 hours and 50 some odd minutes into this show that I'm watching live, and the little thing pops up that says, do you want to continue watching the show? And I'm like, well, yeah. Well, I had done laundry earlier in the day and I had brought the clothes out to fold while I was watching. And I had stacked everything apparently on top of the remote, and I could not find it. And so this is literally, Jacob Fatu had just done the spot. And I'm like, I know what's coming by this point. When they said it was going to be Bloodline Rules, I knew it was coming. We'll dive more into this in just a few minutes. But anyway, I'm like scrambling for the remote. I lose the feed. I finally find the remote. I open it back up to Peacock. Well, you know, usually when you open it up, it's right there. Well, the first thing there was the Olympics. And I'm like, well, no, I don't want to watch the Olympics. So I scroll down a couple of notches and I see SummerSlam. So I click on it. Well, then a 30-second ad pops up. Then it starts with Kid Rock. And I'm like, what the hell is this? It was SummerSlam 2023 from Detroit. And I'm like, ah. So I exit out. By the time I get back to it, the damage is done and Roman is standing. And I'm like, so I felt cheated out of that moment. I'm walking live because I don't want spoilers, and I want to, there are sometimes I like to sit and enjoy and watch the show. And I'm like almost 4 hours into this, and he decides to ask if I'm still interested in it. And I'm like, it's a live show. So anyway,
I get why they ask, because Netflix does the same thing if you stay on the same channel for too long. But yeah, if it's a live program, there should be some way for the program algorithm to understand you're not just binge watching episodes. But right. I had the same thing when I got home last night, because similar to you, is that I didn't even tell my girlfriend that SummerSlam was on yesterday until yesterday afternoon when I went to her place. And then, because we weren't doing anything, we were just sitting around, and she was on Instagram, you know, scrolling through her phone. So I just pulled it up and started watching on my phone, and ended up watching the first hour and a half before we left, went out to eat. And when I got home, I'm like, okay, the show's over, let me try watching. And I clicked on the SummerSlam thing, and it's like, oh, this program is not available. I'm like, so exit back out, and same thing where it was not on the main page. So I go into the WWE sub forum, and there's like SummerSlam right at the top. So I'm like, sure, start it, hit fast forward, because again, I've already watched the first 90 minutes. I don't need to rewatch.
Right.
And it's Ricochet versus Logan Paul. And I'm like, wait, what? And then, that's when I realized, oh, it's 2023, but
we did the same
thing. Old men and technology, tell you. But yeah, and like I said, I told you before we went on the air that the show ended around 7:35 Pacific time, but it wasn't until 10:30 that a replay went up. And that's like, I could have watched the entire show almost in that time that it took them to put a replay. And to me, a replay should go up probably within a half hour of, you know, because you're recording it, as long as they don't have to make any major edits for, you know, if you have a missed camera angle or if, you know, something gets on air that shouldn't, but you should be able to, as soon as it's over, hit the processing button, render button, make the file and upload it to the server, you know?
Right. Well, and you and I have watched, and this is going to probably be the only AEW comparison talk that I'm going to do. We've both watched AEW pay-per-view together. You've been to an AEW pay-per-view before. You know, I think we've talked and noted before in this podcast that it's like all action, 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 action. They don't really break it up and do. WWE, we feel like, does a little bit too much of the packages. And obviously now with, you know, you don't become a multi-billion dollar company by not selling ads and ad space and all that good stuff. And there's got to be a happy medium somewhere, right, though, don't you think, as far as like the action versus the kind of you know, like the R-Truth moment last night was, and the Jelly Roll, I think that was kind of the popcorn moment, if you will, to.
Yeah. And I think, you know, and I think the difference right now is I think I pay like $5.99 for Peacock. Mm-hmm. Whereas, and I get the PLE as part of that package. Whereas an AEW pay-per-view is costing me $50. So if WWE wants to put 50% of their show being ads or recap packages, am I still getting my value in the wrestling? Yes. Right. If AEW wanted to do 50% filler, would I be upset? Most likely, because if I'm shilling out 50, but I've never walked away from an AEW pay-per-view, even some of the lackluster ones over the last year, I always felt like I got my money's worth. Like there's enough. And granted, it may be too much.
That was going to be my next question. You know, seven matches at SummerSlam, 14 wrestlers wrestling, if you will. You know, AEW, I know, has a tendency to stack the card. And again, you're getting quality matches and shows and whatnot. But that comes down to that mentality of, does everybody have to be on every pay-per-view or PLE in the case of WWE?
Well, and I'm just, you know, to compare, the very first WrestleMania had 10 matches. Mm-hmm. So, and that was probably a 2-hour pay-per-view. I don't think there were 3 hours at that time.
Yeah.
So, which is another, you know, I mean, granted, Ultimate Warrior and Honky Tonk Man went 31 seconds, according to Wikipedia. But the other factor is that matches,
you said,
I think,
SummerSlam earlier. You said the first WrestleMania. You meant
SummerSlam. Yeah. And that's the other factor with shows today is that matches, I think there needs to be better variance in match length.
Mm-hmm.
I know last night, Bron Breakker and Sami Zayn, I guess, apparently only went about 6 minutes, which is short by pay-per-view or PLE time frame, even by weekly show time frame nowadays, where everything has to go through a commercial break. But you know, every match doesn't need to be 15, 20 minutes long. Main events don't need to be 30 minutes, especially with, and we'll get to it, we talked about the main event, especially with what they have done with the Bloodline over the last 2 years. Like, to me, the first 95% of the match is meaningless because you're just waiting for that last 5% that's going to matter.
Right. Yeah. All right. Well, let's get into the show. And again, we're just kind of talking and throwing out a few thoughts, comments, and I will have some instances where we're comparing and contrasting to previous shows. Opening up with the women's championship match. And let me ask you this too, not trying to be controversial or, you know, woke, if you will. Do you ever think that we'll see a day with any company where you get five women's matches and two men's matches versus five men's matches and two women's matches?
In WWE, I think a lot needs to change because they don't seem to, even though they are putting more of a focus on the women's match over, you know, over the last 5 years or so, but the fact that the women's tag team match was safe for SmackDown and kind of hit last night that because SmackDown is in the same city as SummerSlam, like it is kind of a 1.5 nights show. So you want to load up, but it seems like if you're not in the title match, your story isn't as prevalent are important. You know, it's not, it's just kind of like, oh, you're in a story, but you're not really doing anything.
Yeah.
Whereas I think in AEW right now, I believe the last pay-per-view had with the pre-show, I think there were 3 women's matches and 27 men's matches, because why not? But no, I mean, I'm not going to say it won't ever happen, because it could, but I think there's still the mentality that women's matches are still kind of an attraction, mm-hmm. but they're not like a bra and panties attraction anymore. So slowly, you know, so given the process of women's wrestling, yes, in 40 years, we should see maybe put more women's matches than men.
That'll be episode 6,320 podcast that we'll review that on. The other thing I wanted to ask you about too, or make note of, I guess not really necessarily ask you about, was you kind of hinted at it, but 6 of the 7 matches were championship matches. Only 1 non-title match, and probably one of the more intriguing matches of Drew McIntyre versus CM Punk. And we'll get to that in a couple minutes, but you know, Liv Morgan, women's champion, versus Rhea Ripley. Rhea's got Dom in her corner. There had been hints and allegations that, you know, well, not allegations. Mm-hmm. We thought, you know, Liv was actively trying to get with Dominic. Mm-hmm. I think we all kind of knew where this was going to go. At least I pretty much anticipated that Dominic was going to somehow screw over Liv more, or Rhea Ripley throughout the course of this. And that's exactly what happened. Now, do you know, was Rhea Ripley legitimately injured while she was out, or was this all just part of the story to get the belt off of her and kind of build this story between?
From what I have read, yes, she was legitimately injured. Okay. Which, why they took the title off of her, you know, given the way wrestling, you know, there is no 30-day defense clause anymore in wrestling. So why they had to take the title off, I don't, other than, I mean, it helped the story, but yeah, I think she was legitimately injured. And, you know, during the match, I was also like, cause she did the dislocated shoulder.
Yeah.
Bit, and I was, you know, there, and I mean, it did look for a moment like there was, you know, her shoulder did look kind of out of place. So I don't know if that was just really well done or if there was some issue there.
Well, like, what is she doing?
Real quick, I'm gonna tangent off of this for a second, because you know, you and I again have been watching wrestling for way longer than we really want to admit, because again, we're old. But this had the shades of drawing a complete blank on what angle this had been done in the past. But let's just say an angle like this had been done previously. When you get to Seth refereeing Drew McIntyre and CM Punk, which was shades of SummerSlam 97, which they hit too. As wrestling fans now, we know that, you know, we have that comparison.
Right, right.
Drew, you know, had they done that at SummerSlam 1, it would have been like pulling an angle from 1962.
Right. Like
62, 64, somewhere in there. That seems like a long time,
right?
As opposed to now. But at that time too, we didn't have the access to go back and watch all that stuff. So do you think fans comparing it to that, those previous angles, is because they've watched it for so long, so it's still fresh, mm-hmm. or is it because of the access to this footage? You can say like, oh, this is similar to this, and if people want to go back and watch, like, it seems like time frames are much more, I don't want to say smaller, but like something that happened 30 years ago feels as fresh now as it did,
right?
You know, when it happened. So it doesn't seem like there is that gap in time. So I wonder if that also played a factor in anyone besides myself's opinion of watching the show and knowing what to expect.
No, I think that's why I knew in my heart of hearts that Dominic was going to turn on Rhea. And I think that there is a population, probably anyone over the age of 35 probably felt that way too. Whereas the younger, especially kids and
right. you
know, people in their early 20s, this was all probably fresh and new to them and probably had no idea. And I know what you're talking about angle-wise, and I can't think of what angle it was either. But, you know, I think that that has happened several times. There's always been a kind of love interest thing, and then one turns on the other. Maybe it was Trish and Chris Jericho and Christian.
Trish, maybe.
I know that happened at WrestleMania 20, for example. So, you know, it has played out. It has happened before. We have seen it before. But with different players and getting to it differently kind of helps with that. And I was in such a nostalgic mindset. Mm-hmm. And maybe I'll save this comment for when we get to the Intercontinental title match, but which ironically is next. But, you know, I did not expect Rhea to walk out with the championship. Although, and again, here's the part where we were talking on the phone before we started recording this show. Of our expectations, by our, I mean fans in general, versus what happens and what WWE or AEW for that matter, or TNA has in mind for their storylines. And when it doesn't meet our expectations, we get disappointed as fans. I would not have been disappointed if Rhea would have ended up beating Liv and winning the title and walking off in the sunset with Dominic, but the story dictated something different. And I, you know, Rhea Ripley right now is my favorite on the female side of things. And I don't think she needs the belt necessarily. And I think that it's going to be an interesting story moving forward, especially as we get further into the card of Judgment Day. It kind of felt like the show was a little bit Judgment Day centered, which I liked. It was different from what we get so much with the Bloodline. So I'm curious to see where things go, but I didn't mind the recalls, the flashbacks, if you will, in the Drew match. I'm sorry. Yeah. In the Drew and Punk match. And then with this one as well. So it was something different. And, you know, Dominic kind of living up to that nasty dirt bag, you know, and I think Pat McAfee even called him a piece of shit. So, you know, it was interesting to see, because I do think that the reactions from the commentary team helped sell that match. It helped add that emotion to the match that fans at home were watching.
Yeah. Again, I watched the first three matches without audio up because I was watching on my phone. So I didn't hear the reactions, but you know, I thought the match itself was fine. I think the other problem with the show in general is that predictability factor, which again, predictability is not a bad thing if a story is told well. But to me, a lot of the outcomes or endings just came off flat. Like, I didn't really feel like Dom helped Liv, like, in a very overt way. It was just kind of like, oh, I'm going to put this chair in, and then she's just going to use it. You know, it wasn't, there was really no like hinting of he was screwing Rhea out of the match. If that makes sense. It just like kind of happened. And then Liv and Dom start making out.
Yeah. I think it could have been a little more blatant, but I think with him stopping her from using the chair kind of planted that seed. And then you knew, okay, something's going to happen here. The other thing with that, because you said you weren't watching on audio. So I'm curious, because I'm wondering what the fans at home or in the audience thought without the commentary. And when Rhea just kind of slams herself into that commentary table to pop her shoulder back in, I'm like, what is she doing? Like, is she trying to make it look like Dominic is attacking her? Because the referee's back was turned at that moment too. But it wasn't until the commentary team said she's popping her shoulder back into place that I'm like, okay, that makes sense. So what did you think seeing that? Did you know what was going on and what she was
doing? I mean, I gather because she kept holding the shoulder and and I did have closed captions on.
Oh, okay.
So I did get to read some poorly typed out recaps of what they were saying. But I mean, when Dom, you know, stopped her from using the chair, that could have been sold too as, hey, if she uses the chair, she's going to get disqualified. And so Dom is trying to calm her down to say, hey, key things, and you know, you want that title, don't screw up. That's and if Don would have just said calm down, you know he's a heel, because any guy telling a woman to calm down,
yes, you know exactly what happened. That's a good point. Well, you know, now we're transitioning to that Intercontinental Championship match, and I thought, and again, this would not have worked with the story that they were telling with Gunther winning the world title that we'll get to in a few minutes. But, you know, he's the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion, Gunther was, at 666 days. Honky Tonk Man was the longest reigning Intercontinental Champion and lost it in quick fashion at the first SummerSlam. I thought it would have been kind of cool if they would have delayed the story and had Gunther lose it at SummerSlam, a la Honky Tonk Man, and, and it could have still been Braun Breaker. But then you take Sami Zayn out of the equation, and I like Sami. I think he, you know, got a nice little run there. And then Gunther goes on to win the championship at whatever the event coming up in Germany is. But again, that's just kind of that fantasy booking. And I thought of it last night as the Intercontinental title match was going on. I'm like, oh, you know what? The longest reign came to an end at SummerSlam. It would have been kind of, you know, fun 30 some odd years later, however many years that was. What is it? 36 years later to do it again. But anyway, I digress. Braun Breaker, though, to me is a stud. I think that he is kind of the future of WWE. Rick and Scott Steiner being, I think he's a hybrid of Rick and Scott, you know, if those two, if they match their DNA and did, I think that's right. Braun Breaker. I'm just impressed with him. I've been impressed since he was back in NXT, and I think a lot of people got pissed when he lost the Intercontinental title match previously, but I think SummerSlam all but made up for that moment of him being this, hopefully, you know, real deal, and that he doesn't get crammed down our throats like Roman Reigns did in the past, and they actually legitimately work him to be moving up that card, because he's still young and has a ton of upside, I think.
Yeah. You know, this is a match that, again, because it was relatively short, I didn't catch all of, because I was having conversation at the time and trying to watch and act like I was actually paying attention to the conversation, because again, when you're talking to women,
right,
you know, but after their match at the last, it was Money in the Bank, like this one, again, I expected Braun to win, you know, because the way that he's been built and whatnot, but again, it just seemed, and I blame this more on watching without audio and not fully paying attention, where the ending just felt like it was abrupt. And I don't know if how many, because I only saw him hit the last spear. I don't know how many spears he'd hit during the match, but you know, and I, you know, we'll talk about this too when we talk about Bayley and Nia Jax, where it's like Sammy won the match, won the Intercontinental title at WrestleMania, and I don't really feel like there's been much done with that title reign. You know, part of me still wants to say Chad Gable should have won it, and it would have been more elevating wise for him to be champion than, because Sammy has already been multiple time champion, you know. But yeah, no, I agree with what you're saying. Like Braun, I think Braun should be the future of the company. Don't shove him down, you know, let him get there organically. Don't, yeah, overall, I mean, good match. There's really, I mean, I think if I go back real quick and look at everything else, I believe this is the only match that didn't have any type of outside, you know, I mean, if you count Seth Rollins being part of an outside factor, was the only match on the show that didn't have any outside factors involved, which is another issue when we talk, wrap up the entire show. It's like the people on the outside were more, I think, took away from matches more than they helped.
Let me ask you one more thing about Braun. And this is a topic we've talked about for years. You know, wrestlers being you know, in character while they're in the ring.
Yeah.
Been on social media or in, you know, post-match interviews and stuff, kind of letting that guard down. I've seen criticism from both sides where when you are a wrestler, you're on, if you're on social media as Bron Breakker,
mm-hmm.
you're on there as Bron Breakker, not Bronson Steiner or Bronson Rick Steiner. And mm-hmm. so we don't want to see pictures of you and your girlfriend at the beach. Mm-hmm. We don't want to see you kissing puppies and you know, play that yeah. character on social media as well. And obviously we've talked about it before. You know, I noticed it because after, and I only watched one quick little clip, but after they had like the, I think before the media scrum, they had the panel back on.
Hmm.
And I don't know the woman's name. I apologize. But
Jackie she had Redmond?
Asked, what's that?
Was it Jackie Redmond?
Probably.
Okay.
She had asked him about Rick and Scott Steiner being there and watching and what that meant to him. And his, you know, like when he's cutting, you know, he went from like this big hulking, you know, to a very, you know, articulated answer and, you know, talking about the emotion and what that meant to him. And it just made me think, you know, I see it as it's a double-edged sword because obviously if that would have been, if SummerSlam was a movie premiere and the movie was over and Tom Hanks was there, it's a Tom Hanks movie and Tom Hanks comes out and they start asking him questions. He's going to answer those questions as Tom Hanks and not as yeah. Forrest Gump. And I'm just, I know.
Although it would have been better if he'd answer as Forrest Gump. But yes, go on.
But, you know, I felt like Bronson Rick Steiner was answering that question and not Bron Breakker. And again, I don't know what the right answer is because I do think social media can be used as an enhancement to help propel and advance storylines. But then also sometimes it's like, listen, we all know. We're in on it. Huh. We get it. So yeah, you can be a human and be a person on social media. So I don't even know why I brought it up.
Well, let me tell you, bro. You know, bro, what you gotta is like in the Dominic and Rhea bro storyline, bro, is that we all know, bro, that Rhea is married to Buddy Murphy, bro. And we know that Dominic is also just got married, bro. So bro, let me tell you, the story, bro, just does not work.
Yeah. So and that's the thing. It's like I don't know, you know, as a fan, I like seeing some of the behind the scenes stuff on social media. So it doesn't bother me, but I know that there are some that are out there that are like, I want this to be, you know, have a separate account or whatever, but I don't know. I guess it doesn't bother me. Does it bother you or do you even pay attention to that?
I mean, I don't pay attention that much to wrestling social media, but, you know, we've talked about it before where it's like John Cena is, because it's his real name, is John Cena his entire time, but is it John Cena the wrestler or John Cena the person? And it's so I think, you know, it's the issue that wrestling always has, it's why wrestling I think gets criticized for being fake because people don't separate the actor from the real person. You know, again, when Tom Hanks or Tom Cruise comes out at the end of the Olympics and does a stunt, we know that's not Ethan Hunt doing the stunt. We know it's going to be Tom Cruise doing the stunt.
Yeah.
But when, you know, Bron Breakker hits a move in the ring, well, is that Bron Breakker or is that, like you said, Bronson Rex Steiner? And I don't know. Sadly, it's that double-edged sword for wrestling and you just have to go on. But bro, let me tell you, bro, I'm just waiting for the Bron Breakker bro versus Braun Strowman battle for the rights to call themselves Bron, bro.
Hey, did you send it to me or it might have been Weston, the Hulk Hogan testimony, speaking of being,
I think I sent it to you.
Yeah. Go look it up because it's too,
Hulk Hogan has a 10-inch penis. I don't have a 10-inch penis.
Yeah.
Oh, court cases.
Let me tell you something. Yeah. LA Knight.
Nah.
I like LA Knight, but I also, it is kind of, we're going back to that conversation earlier about what's old is new again. Is he too much of an Austin, Stone Cold Steve Austin and Rock ripoff? And was he like that in the NWA and in TNA? I didn't watch enough of him in those organizations to know if this is a carryover of that, or is L.A. Knight a whole different character?
No, it's a, I mean, he was Eli Drake. So instead of being L.A. Knight, it was Eli Drake. Yeah. My problem with L.A. Knight, and I'm a fan of his, but it seems like that ship has sailed. Like, he was really hot when he came in, and now it's just kind of, because nothing has been done with him, it's just kind of tapered off. And he's still getting big reactions, don't get me wrong, but it just doesn't feel like the, I think it's more about the sing-along aspect of, hey, we can do something. And, you know, we've talked about it before, where if you have a catchphrase that fans can go along with, they're going to be into your matches more than not. So, I mean, I'm glad that he won the U.S. title. Good for him. It's probably about 6 months overdue or a year, because everybody wanted him to win Money in the Bank last year. And, you know, I've seen stuff, speaking of social media, online, where Logan Paul had made some tweets regarding the Olympics the day before, and people are all up in arms about that because, well, that's what social media is made for, is to be offended by everything. But again, going back to what I was saying about the end of Rhea and Dom, it's like, this is, the ending was the same ending that we've seen in every other Logan Paul match. You know, his friends get involved, they give him the brass knucks, and then he hits LA Knight with the brass knucks, and then LA Knight just gets up and hits his move and pins him. It's like, it just felt very anticlimactic.
Well, and there were two matches that I will say I got wrong in my predictions, and this was one of them. I thought, because it was Logan Paul's hometown, and I think LA Knight beat Logan Paul in a non-title match, or he beat him somewhere else, didn't he, along the way to get to SummerSlam or something
yeah,
maybe he humiliated him, I don't remember what it was. So I had anticipated Logan Paul winning this, because the announcers also kept saying, but then when they kept building up of, you know, LA Knight's always come up short, he's got to win the big, you know, this is his opportunity, then I'm like, I kind of changed my tune. But I agree. And I also wonder, or I think, from my perspective, you know, when they keep giving Logan the brass knucks and the thing, Logan Paul is without a doubt the most talented celebrity to transition into wrestling. I don't think there's any, you're not going to convince me of anybody else that's done it better. And to me, I almost feel like the brass knucks almost minimizes, because he is so good, he doesn't need that stuff, and they add that. And I don't know if they add that to build up that, you know, bad guy heel persona, or why they do it. Because I could see, if he were not as good or not as crisp, that he would need a prop or a crutch or a backup or the support. And again, I know it's all part of the story and whatever, but I just think that it has become an overdone trope for him. And I know he hasn't, you know, people also got pissy on social media that, you know, he's only defended the belt like 10 times or 8 times or what, you know, 2 times. Okay.
2 times.
even worse. But it's like, again, there's no 30-day rule anymore, and it's part of the show. It's part of the
act. Yeah.
Get over it if you are pissy that Logan Paul, because then you'd be bitching that Logan Paul's on every week defending the title, and you know, no one else is getting it. So, whatever. That's my take on championship title defenses and all that. So, the other match that I did not call correctly was Nia Jax and Bayley for the women's championship. Mm-hmm. I had anticipated Bayley winning, you know, it going down the way it did, basically, where Bayley gets her ass kicked most of the match. Bayley retains, and then Tiffy cashes in and wins the championship, and then sets up a struggle between her and Nia, because Tiffany took advantage of the beatdown of Bayley. That's how I thought it was going to end. And I actually thought, even after it ended, that Tiffany was going to waffle Nia with the briefcase and somehow pull off a win. But I'll be curious to see where they go with this storyline. I like Tiffany Stratton a lot, for many reasons, but I do think that she, again, kind of like Bron Breakker, I think that she has that potential to be a future superstar for a long time. Mm-hmm. She's young and she's athletic, and she can definitely get into that character mode, I think, that people love to hate.
Yeah. And I think the story, I mean, I expected Bayley to win just because I don't think, you know, this is going to be harsh, but between you and me, neither one of us really wants to see Nia Jax.
Right.
You know, but that's a personal thing.
Yeah.
Personal preference. But I guess, but the story with Tiffy and Nia being buddy-buddy and Nia giving her the new Money in the Bank briefcase and saying, okay, I'm going to give this to you, but you can't use it on me, now sets up that storyline for...
I missed that part of
it. I think that was on SmackDown. Yeah.
Okay. I missed the first half of SmackDown. So, okay.
Okay. So that the story makes, but, and again, like I said with Sami Zayn earlier, Bayley, since winning the title at Mania, just hasn't felt like that much of a factor in the storyline. So I'm not upset Bayley won or lost. It is what it is. And again, storyline. It's all storyline driven.
It is very story driven. Another big storyline driven match, Drew McIntyre versus Seth Rollins. I'm sorry, versus CM Punk with Seth Rollins as the special guest referee. You know, they pointed out, they noted the SummerSlam has had special guest referees. The very first one was Jesse Ventura. Mm. He was back in 99 refereeing the main event matches. You had, of course, Shawn Michaels, The Undertaker, and Bret Hart in that story. That's where I think they were most closely kind of tying all this in together. Mm-hmm. Because allegedly, you know, all three men don't like each other. I thought it was good. I was honestly concerned for Punk, just thinking, you know, is he going to be, you know, let's face it. And I'm not making fun or criticizing the guy. He's in his mid-40s. Our bodies change as we get older. We're more, you know, injuries and all this stuff. And there are some guys that are in there doing it and defying it. And apparently I read somewhere that Dory Funk may have a match.
Yeah.
81 or 82 or however old he is. So, you know, I'm not criticizing Punk at all, but I was concerned that, you know, a wrong move, you know, you get hit the wrong way and you're back on the shelf. And so that concerned me, but I think I don't know, the friendship bracelet thing.
Dude, it's 2024. A Taylor Swiftie friendship bracelet had to be the focus of a match.
I don't know, man. I just thought it was so, like, knowing Punk.
Yeah.
To me, it didn't work in that. And this is going to come off sounding completely sexist, but had that been in a women's championship match, I could have bought more into that. But with Punk, and I know he loves his wife and he loves his dog. Yeah. I would have even bought it more, I think, with Cody, because they've incorporated Cody's wife and dog into the storyline.
But yeah, but if you ask Jack Perry, he'll tell you CM Punk's a little bitch. So we're my issue with the match is, I mean, this has probably been the best built match of the entire card.
Yeah.
And, you know, Drew and Punk hate each other.
Yeah.
And they go out and have a match. Like, I didn't feel the hatred that they've built up over the last 6 months.
Yeah.
It was just a normal match. And then, you know, when the friendship bracelet was on the ground, Seth picked it up and put it on. And then Punk's like doing his move and then notices it and just stops and puts McIntyre down. He's like, you got my bracelet. All Seth, again, had to do was say, like, dude, I just picked it up. He could have taken it off and handed it to Punk and been like, look, it's your, you know, I just didn't want it to get broken. You know, so I felt like that the last 10% of the match, that hatred or animosity between them all three felt fake. It felt like it's like, we have to put this into the match to get to the ending. It just, again, so this match, this is probably like the biggest disappointment match on the show because of the expectation going in of the hatred. And I do think, you know, they pointed out, like you said, the 1997 special referee match. And I think they did that, as we were saying earlier, where even though it was 27 years ago, it still feels kind of fresh. So you can be like, hey, we know we've done this before, and we're going to, you know, have the little spot where Seth goes to hit Punk and almost hits Drew. That's like a callback to that match.
Yeah.
Okay, we've got that out of the way. Now we can get on with the rest of the match without fans expecting that spot. But Yeah, like, overall, what's that?
No, go ahead.
Oh, I just, yeah, this was just a disappointing, and you know, I've seen speculation that they were working kind of soft because they didn't want Punk to get injured again in his first match, which may be the case, you know, whatever. But yeah, I mean, I expected Drew to win because that keeps the story, again, as I think this episode is brought to us by the word storyline, that keeps the storyline going, and we'll see where they go next, but. And I think McIntyre needed the win more than Punk.
I agree. And then speaking of McIntyre and Punk and their relationship, you know, What are your thoughts? What's your takeaway of the photo that Drew tweeted and I think deleted it later, but of, or I guess posted on X, not tweeted anymore, but anyway, of him and Jungle Jack Perry or Jack Perry, whatever his
the scapegoat.
Name. Yeah. The scapegoat. I thought at first it was Photoshop, but apparently it was a legit photo. You know, was he forced to remove that? Was that part of it? I felt like it's all kind of part of the story and we're all being worked along. What was your takeaway from that?
One, I was just curious where they ran into each other.
Right. That's what I'm like, where were they?
Yeah. I mean, I think maybe it's a little too inside baseball. Mm-hmm. Because it's like you have to know the AEW storyline. And, you know, we've discussed many times here on the show where I think AEW fans, a good portion of them watch WWE. I don't think a lot of WWE fans watch AEW.
Right.
And so if you don't, and I even saw, you know, this YouTuber, his name, I'll give him a shout out, not that he's watching and anything, but his name is Deporticus. I've started watching his videos. He's entertaining. He's only been watching wrestling since WrestleMania 39. And so like a lot of his videos are like getting into it and asking questions. And I saw he posted on Twitter, you know, on X as well. He like, he put the picture. He's like, who is this? What am I missing here? Mm. You know, something like that. And so I think, you know, that's the case. It's like, so again, maybe Drew deleted it because no one got the joke, you know, or the reference, but I don't know. I mean, in 3 years when Jack Perry's contract is up and Tony Khan forgets that he's even wrestling there anymore, we'll see Jungle Jack come back and team up with CM Punk and WWE to win the tag titles.
He was at SummerSlam, what was it, 2013?
2013, yeah. I think 2013, yeah.
In LA, so. Gunther versus the world champion, Damian Priest. No disrespect to anyone involved. I feel like this world championship, it was established, what, over a year ago or whatever it was when Seth Rollins won it. To me, it just feels less than. It's almost like the IC title's Big Brother. It's It doesn't feel like world championship stuff to me. And I don't know if that's because they have put so much energy and focus on that universal champion, you know, when Roman was both champions and then Brock Lesnar, you know, you have Brock Lesnar and Roman Reigns and now Cody Rhodes. And then again, no disrespect to Damian Priest, but it's like, I just didn't feel like he was on that same plane as those guys. Gunther versus Damian Priest would not have closed out SummerSlam. Or any pay-per-view, in my opinion.
That's a main event in any arena.
I just don't see that being, that championship being revered enough to be a show closer. So when you have, especially when you have a dual event like this, and I don't know if they're going back to the Raw and SmackDown style pay-per-views. I don't feel like they have yet. Or PLEs. This match, or this championship, just does not have the significance that previous world champions have had.
Yeah, I think the title itself is fine, but I don't think Damian Priest was built up enough before winning the title. And especially since, you know, he won out on a cash-in of the Money in the Bank, which after several unsuccessful attempts at cashing in, and I think that hurt Damian Priest as well. because he to me was never presented as a championship material,
right,
or a contender. And I think he's done well since winning the title, and I look forward to his matches more than I would have thought I would, you know, but I still saw him as a transitional champ.
Yeah.
And, but I, you know, I thought the match was fine, and I thought that he held his own with Gunther. Gunther is also someone that I'm not overly like excited about. Yeah. And I get, and I understand why fans are, and I understand why I should be, but I just, he just doesn't resonate with me.
Dude, I'm the same way. When it came down to him and Cody at the end of the Rumble,
2 years ago
now, I felt the same way. And when he was in NXT, and he's impressive. 870 days as NXT UK champion, and 666 days as Intercontinental champion, the longest reigning champion of two different title reigns. It's impressive. He's good in the ring, but there is something missing with him, and I don't know what it is. I don't know if he needs a manager, a mouthpiece, someone else to kind of be a heater for him. I don't know what it is, but yeah, I just, for me as a fan, there's something missing with him. Mm-hmm. And I'm curious to see if, you know, we just mentioned these two impressive title reigns. Does this become the third? You know, is he going to be, and then maybe bring some stability and credibility to that championship, because I know it's I know there's always been a world champion, but this is a newer concept, I think, that they're trying to do with it. Mm-hmm. And we talked earlier, and I guess we can get to Roman Reigns here as well. But you know, with this Netflix deal that starts in January. Also, I want to know: is Raw and SmackDown going to be on USA until then? Because I know USA SmackDown starts on USA in September.
Yeah, they worked out a deal to keep Raw on through the end of the year.
Okay. Are they going to keep SmackDown on Friday nights on USA?
I believe so.
You know, I'm just curious, where are the eyeballs going to be? You know, does Netflix – I've heard Netflix wants Roman Reigns, for example, but then – championship-wise, you know, because I think we saw this when SmackDown went to Fox back 4 or 5 years ago, when Brock Lesnar decimated Kofi Kingston in 9 seconds and won the belt. I think that was partly a demand from Fox that Brock is on their show. And so these network demands, you know, and I know they're paying millions of dollars, and that, you know, again, you don't become a billion-dollar corporation you know, not doing some of these things that maybe fans don't always agree with, but I just don't see a Gunther-led Raw being something that fans are going to buy Netflix or subscribe to Netflix to watch. I don't know.
Yeah, I don't. I'm curious to see how Raw does on Netflix. And again, streaming platforms don't release numbers unless they're like really great. Mm-hmm. So the weekly, you know, internet trend of overreacting to ratings, you know, it's going to be interesting to see, because if you can't get the numbers from Netflix, are you, you know, how are you going to brag or talk shit about Raw, you know? So we'll see. I mean, I think Raw has enough star power outside of Gunther, right? You know, if they keep things the way they are. And I think everyone is still waiting for Jey Uso to win the title. We'll see if that gets built up. I am firmly no yeet, but that's not against Jey. That's just against me hating popular slang, because, again, old. Yeah, but going back to this match, again, outside interference or outside shenanigans that played more of a role, I think, in the match than the match itself. And, you know, we'll have to tune into Raw to see how the whole Judgment Day implosion plays out. And I just, you know, Finn Balor is one half of the tag champions. So why?
Okay. I didn't realize that. So
he and JD McDonough won the tag titles from whoever had them. Awesome Truth. Yeah. Yeah, we'll see how that plays out. But yeah, I mean, the match was, again, it's fine. It's good. It was serviceable. Will I need to go back and rewatch it anytime soon? No.
And here's where I also want to make a comment. And you and I, again, this mm-hmm. is a conversation through us throughout the dawn of time with wrestling, is trying to apply logic to an illogical situation. If I'm Finn Balor, and I've always wanted to be world champion,
mm-hmm.
why would I screw my buddy out of the belt to get it to a guy that is bigger, stronger, tougher, mm-hmm. you know, more established than I am? Yeah. Why would I not help him win and then turn on him and challenge him and go for the belt?
I had the same thought because you figure this will lead to a Balor versus Damian Priest feud. Wouldn't Balor want to be champion, especially since, you know, he won the Universal title and then had to give it up 24 hours later?
Yeah, that's what I'm like, man, yeah. this makes sense. And again, we're trying to apply logic to an illogical situation, but I just think that obviously, you know, storyline wise, they're going in a different direction with Gunther and does Damian Priest turn into a Jack Swagger? You know, I think sometimes he's becomes my example of, you know, a guy that wins the gold and then kind of falls off and into oblivion, you know, when he won the title from Chris Jericho and then he just kind of disappeared down the card once he lost it back. So
yeah, but I will say Jack Swagger eventually got a cool hat.
But I mean, I think that's part of the problem too, and this is probably a topic for another day, but that's part of the problem with the Money in the Bank. Sometimes they give it to an established guy like a Brock Lesnar or a Randy Orton, and then sometimes they give it to someone that they want to give that shine to. I personally am happy that the cash-in already happened for this year, so we don't have that year-long story of, is he going to cash in or isn't? We're going to get that with but I think it'll work with that case.
Yeah, I was going to mention that during that match too. It's like, I am so over the Money in the Bank
concept.
Especially now that you have two of them.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, because it is the, oh, I'm going to cash in. Oh, no, I'm not. Oh, I am. No. And it seems like whoever wins the Money in the Bank goes on a losing streak and then cashes in and wins. And you're like supposed to treat them like a champion because they have the title.
Right. Yeah. So I think that's what hurt Damian Priest too. But
yeah.
Okay. Our main event, it's Bloodline Rules. Probably the biggest, to me, the biggest surprise of the night, Arn Anderson, seeing him backstage.
Just roaming around backstage like Joe Biden, wandering around like, where am I?
You know, I used to listen to the Arn podcast and you know, he was not very complimentary of WWE in his time there. I know that he left under some maybe not so great circumstances originally as a trainer or a producer or whatever they call him now. He was a big part of AEW for a while there and was Cody's manager. Which I never really bought into, but I get it. I knew you weren't watching live during SummerSlam. Tyler was, so we were texting back and forth, and I had said, because Arn made a comment about having friends there, and I said, God, I hope this doesn't mean that Brock Anderson is coming out to help Cody. Because up until last night, I didn't realize it was Bloodline Rules again. So
again, that was made on SmackDown.
Okay, again, I missed that part of that SmackDown. So once they established that, I'm like, okay, I know. I did know at SmackDown. I knew at the end of SmackDown, they said something about it when the other two won the tag team title. So yeah. Mm-hmm. So I knew it was coming, but anyway, I wondered who was going to, be a part of
friends.
Yeah, who the friends were going to be. I kind of forgot about it. So.
Oh, yeah. And it was shocking, like, the guys that he's been teaming with for the last month.
Right.
It was like, I mean, I think it would have been better, given the AEW history, if he would have given him a gun and said, here, take them out. And again, you and I talked about this prior to this recording. Bloodline, to me, is NWO Wolfpack versus NWO Black and White right now. It is so uninteresting to me because It's the same thing week after week. The first, again, according to Wikipedia, the match went 29 minutes and 10 seconds. The first 25 minutes, pointless, because you were just waiting for Bloodline to come in. You were waiting for the run-ins. Why, since it was Bloodline rules, again, making logic out of an illogical situation, why didn't the entire Bloodline just attack Cody right at the beginning and beat him down? Why did they wait, you know? And then, yeah, and then we all got the return that still makes no sense to me. I mean, let me rephrase. The return makes sense. The fan reaction doesn't make sense to me. But with the Tribal Chief coming back.
And why don't you think it makes sense?
Because Roman was top heel until he lost the title. He's been gone. He's done nothing to change that persona. But the fans have changed into wanting him. Even though when he comes back, he'll still probably only show up once every 2 months or so.
Well, you know, absence makes the heart grow fonder. I think with them taking out, they being the Bloodline, taking out Paul Heyman, all of those little things, I think, were seeds being planted to get Roman that reaction. How could we make the current Bloodline better? You know, Jacob Fatu is an amazing talent. He's, you know, was high praises on the indie scene, or, you know, MLW and some of the other companies he was working for. And I don't know all of the, I know the other two are Haku's kids. Tama Tonga.
Yeah, sure.
The guy with the eye patch, is that a legit injury, or is he just kind of channeling his inner pirate?
Yeah, I thought Rocky Romero had jumped ship from AEW when I saw him come out with the eye patch. So, I mean, that's new to me. I don't know why, but yeah, you know, my feeling with this Bloodline is not that it's they don't have the talent. It's, you know, as we've said before, Solo Sikoa was a chump during the last 6 months, you know, other than beating John Cena.
Right.
He wasn't presented as a credible threat. He was just the heater to, you know, help Roman win matches. Yeah. But he wasn't winning matches on his own.
Yeah.
And now he's taken over. And then you get three guys that the audience doesn't know.
Yeah.
Again, if I watch New Japan Wrestling, I might be familiar with them, you know. Right. And if, or if, when they came in, if I got a video package telling me who they are, you know, which is something that, you know, it gets AEW gets a lot of criticism for. It's just like, oh, you have these guys show up from Japan or CMLL and we don't know who they are. And it's like, well, that's, you know, that's true. I mean, that's the case. But I just, I don't. And again, the Bloodline saga has been going on for 3-4 years now. It's just, once again, going back again, as another theme of the show, again, it was the NWO. I've seen it. I've been there. I got the t-shirt, literally. Got the NWO t-shirt at Starrcade 96. But I don't need a Bloodline. I'm tired of the Bloodline. And the Bloodline is the main focus on SmackDown without being in the orbit of anybody else in SmackDown. So it seems like you're either in the, you know, the main, or you're nothing somewhat, you know. Or at least what Judgment Day has on Raw has kind of ebbed and flowed with other wrestlers. But the Bloodline just seems to be about the blood, you know, it's all about Roman. And, you know, I think Roman is now Poochie. You know, it's like when Roman's not on screen, everyone should talk about Roman and when he's coming back. So yeah, again, this is just me. I don't like it. You know, I've gone over on this show before. I don't think Cody is the top draw. I think he is a top draw in the fans' eyes. I don't see him as top draw wrestler-wise.
I think that there are things they could have done differently with Cody's reign so far. But I do think, like you said, merchandise sales and the fan reaction, you know, he is this generation's John Cena.
Yeah.
And, you know, the mainstream, and we talked about this too, you know, I don't see Solo Sikoa going on the Today Show and being, you know, that mouthpiece or that representation for WWE.
Yeah.
So, in that regard, and I think that it was, it was an interesting time before Cody won the belt, because he was kind of being that mouthpiece and doing those kind of media things before he became the champion. And now he's the champion. So it all ultimately, I think, makes sense. But I do hope that they work on, because in the 80s, Hulk Hogan had a heel factory of big, nasty heels, and, you know, Paul Orndorff and Rowdy Roddy Piper and Dr. D. David Schultz, and then Big John Studd and King Kong Bundy. It was a variety of opponents that were dastardly, nasty heels. Whereas I don't think Cody has been afforded that same heel factory of sorts. So I hope, you know, if they're going to keep the belt with him and do some things, I'm hoping we see something different. But like you said, the headline coming out of SummerSlam is the return of Roman Reigns, not Cody Rhodes retains Universal Championship. And so I'll be curious to see where they go with these two. If they do have another match, how does The Rock factor back into this? Does the bloodline, are we going to get Roman's bloodline versus Solo's bloodline? And if we do, again, they need to work their butts off of making Solo's bloodline feel, because I think Roman watching, it almost feels like Roman could go in and destroy all of those guys. And so we need some work. And now Jacob Fatu, you know, we saw it. I actually asked Tyler, you know, do you think he's legitimately hurt? Because the way he reacted afterward seemed like, I'm frustrated, I can't get up, and I can't continue here. As of this recording on Sunday morning, we don't know anything official, but I did see right before we started recording a video from a fan. He ran into the bloodline at a convenience store or gas station or something, and so Jacob Fatu is wearing a boot. So how injured he is, we don't know what factors this will take. That's the good thing about the bloodline, though, of having all these extra players, is you almost get that Freebird rules when it comes to the tag titles, for example, maybe, so they don't have to necessarily interrupt the story in that regard. But we'll see. But yeah, I agree. I do think it has become a long overplayed thing. Maybe the bloodline gets, the new bloodline gets a mouthpiece like Paul Heyman, because I can't imagine Paul Heyman coming back and not being with Roman. I don't know. It just feels less than, and I can't, as a fan, buy into, you know, at least with the Wolfpack versus the Black and White, you had Hall and Nash, and then Hogan, and I don't know who else was part of that. But anyway, it felt a little more even
to an playing field.
Even playing field. Right now with the bloodline, I just don't feel it. And again, I think it happened too fast. I could have waited until Survivor, but maybe Survivor Series, we're going to get a War Games match with the two bloodlines. But I could have waited for Roman's return. I know a lot of fans were ready for it. It's only been 3 months. I could have gone a little longer and waited for it to be a bit more impactful, because this bloodline storyline has been going on for 3 years, or 4 years, and now I feel like we hit fast forward to get Roman back into the story. So
yeah, and like I said, it also took away from Cody. You know, it's Cody is the afterthought here, and if that's going to be your champion and finishing the story, you know, now his post-championship run just feels like the end of the third Lord of the Rings movie, where it just goes on and on forever, or not necessarily forever, you know, it's only been 4 months, but it goes on and on with no point. So,
well, and I'm really hoping that Roman's motivation to come back is for the tribal chief and not for the championship. So then that gives him a story to do in the meantime. And we can focus on Cody. So we could still have two top of the card stories going on. And give Cody some emphasis and some focus. I'm still waiting for that Randy Orton turn. So maybe that happens down the road here too. So
yeah,
I know you can't wait for that.
I've got my I Love Randy shirt ready to go.
Anything else you want to add before we're turning this into an AEW pay-per-view style?
Again, you know, I mean, I have accepted the fact that WWE shows are not, I am not the target audience. I am not the necessary. I think the wrestling is good. I like the wrestlers. the presentation just falls flat for me most of the time. And that's how I felt with SummerSlam. The matches were good. The action was good. The overall stories just left me feeling. But my biggest question is, how do you do a show in Cleveland and not have WWE Hall of Famer Drew Carey make an appearance?
Oh, wow. Yeah.
Baffling.
Something to ponder. Getting held down in his own town. All right, Chad, thank you for being a part of this week's episode. We want to hear from you, so weigh in. Let us know your thoughts. Check out the My123Cents Facebook group and the Facebook page, and let us know what is on your mind. Thanks for watching and or listening. Have a great week, and we will talk again soon.
This is a production of the Jittery Monkey Podcast Network. For more jittery shenanigans, go to jitterymonkey.com.